You're listening to Outside the Cage with your hosts, Gabriel Owens and Alan Yod.
I don't hear myself echoing, unlike I do when I yell into the caverns of your mom.
Right.
Welcome to Outside the Cage. I'm Gabriel Owens. With me is Alan Young.
Greetings.
And we're here to talk about mixed martial arts and the stuff that has gone on the last couple weeks.
It's been an interesting couple of weeks.
True. The still the biggest story, I think. Brock Lesnar got his ass whooped by Cain Velasquez last weekend as of this recording.
That he did.
Cain Velasquez is definitely a bad motherfucker.
Yeah. Brock's sheer athletic ability got him really far, but I think he was just not prepared for someone of the caliber of Velasquez.
Yeah, I think it finally became apparent his inexperience at the top level is really catching up with him, especially in terms of striking. He's still just really, I mean, yeah, he hits hard when he connects, but he still doesn't have good striking. A lot of people re-question the Shane Carwin fight. Did he get lucky that Carwin gassed out when he did?
That's quite possible.
But at any rate, you have a new UFC heavyweight champion, the first Mexican heavyweight champion, if we don't count half of Rico Rodriguez.
Well, half of Rico Rodriguez is still a lot of Mexican.
True. Well, he's not. No, I mean, if that was a fat joke, you're way out of touch.
What, is he slimmed down?
Oh, he's way slimmed down. Yeah, go look up a recent picture of the guy. He doesn't look anything like Rico Rodriguez anymore.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't know if he's playing a comeback or what, but yeah, he dropped. Looks about 50 pounds.
Oh, wow.
His abs and everything.
Ooh.
I know, you're turned on. He's a handsome man.
Right.
So, other big story. UFC is finally folding WEC into the main roster. No more WEC. There still will be events on Versus, but...
will be, what, four UFC events on Versus next year?
Right.
And I think it's safe to assume that there will be a... heavy amount of the WEC roster on those cards. It would stand to reason.
You never know. They if they're looking for ratings, they might put on UFC big names.
Well, I'm sure it'll be a mixture, but I think they'll try to keep at least a few of the fighters who are accustomed to the versus audience on the card.
Sure.
I could be wrong.
No, I can agree with that, but the big thing of this, a lot of the lower level cusp guys on both cards are probably really fearing for their jobs at this point because UFC's just not going to have the fights it did. You know, WEC ran more fights on versus than four before this. So,
right.
They're only going to have so many fights to give, and you know, if you're struggling near the bottom of a card, say you're a Tito Ortiz and you're getting paid a hell of a lot to keep losing, you may be in danger.
That's true. I don't know. You think there will be fewer cards in total now?
Dave Meltzer was talking about it before, and he seemed to think, and I believe people in SureDog were talking about it too. It seems like there will be less, maybe not more less fight cards, but lesser overall. They're looking to cut lesser overall fighters, looking to open up room for more people to have more fights. You know, the better fighters, and just keep giving. You know, they don't have the need to fill up cards with just people.
Right. Some of the lesser fighters, the ones who haven't been so successful, will end up on the cutting room floor. That's not a good analogy, but anyway. I'm not being cut.
Yes.
To make room for the higher level, smaller guys.
And that's the nature of the beast, you know. You've got to make room for people winning. It's a sport. You know, it's a one-on-one competition sport. It's not like, you know, an established major league team sport where, you know, a team that's really shitty can just keep going because, you know, someone owns a team and they're in the league.
You know? Right.
I mean, there's a place to work, but it's just not in the big leagues.
Right.
So you got that going on. So Brock lost. Bellator is apparently begging Strikeforce for a cross-promotion card.
I hadn't seen that.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen. Melendez, Alvarez would be an awesome fight, and that's about the only thing I'd like to see them cross-promote, is they're two lightweight champions.
Right.
The rest of it, I could care less. You know.
I can't say that I have followed Bellator at all.
I have not watched one Bellator card. Everyone says they're actually pretty good, but
yeah,
they have two fighters I care about, Alvarez and Huerta. Huerta. Yeah, and Alvarez killed Huerta, and now apparently looking to offload him in his expensive contract. But you know, we'll see. Scott Coker's overextended his money. I don't think he's going to look to possibly embarrass his own fighters if, you know, a couple of them lose to the Bellator guys. Because they were looking for an actual, you know, title versus title. And,
right.
And, you know, why? I wouldn't do it. That's just me. Scott Coker's done some weird shit the last couple of years.
That is true. But, yeah, you make a good point, though, that putting your top guys on the line against another promotion when there's a good chance that they're going to lose is not a sound business decision, which is exactly why the UFC doesn't co-promote.
No. They want their guys. If you're going to win, they want you representing their company.
Right.
Like they didn't bring in Fader, even if they were 99% sure, you know, say Cain Velasquez could beat Fedor, they're still not going to bring Fedor in without
having him under contract.
Without have him under contract to remain their champion, and they could promote him.
Right.
I actually think Cain Velasquez would kill Fedor at this point, but
it wouldn't surprise me.
We've seen Fedor's human. He got, you know, beat by a mid-level guy.
He did.
So, you know, I think he actually had a better chance against Brock than he does against Cain. But I'm just, as the years at this point go by, I'm just less and less thinking we'll ever see Fedor in UFC.
Yeah.
Unless he's just completely washed up looking for a payday.
Right. And at that point, you know, there's no telling if Dana would even want him.
Oh, he'd want him. It would just give him, like, a satisfaction to watch him to finally come to UFC and get beat, I think.
Yeah,
it would be more against his management than actual Fedor, I don't think.
Right.
I don't think Dana has anything actually against Fedor, but he definitely, and he's not the only one, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of people, including Strikeforce, grumbling about Vladder and M1 management and how they run business. But we still haven't heard what's going to happen with Fedor next. He hasn't picked an opponent or...
Yeah, everything I've read about the M1 management, they seem, if not shady, at least extremely demanding, unreasonably demanding.
Well, and stupid at this point, because, you know, by holding back against UFC, they threw away a lot of money.
Right.
The money was all for him being undefeated. And as soon as he lost that fight to... Verdum, yes. Wordum. We're going to be all American about it.
Wordum up.
His price got cut in half, like as soon as he tapped.
Right.
His hilarious. I think we talked about on the show before, Dana's tweet of the happy face.
Yes.
And in other international MMA news, Jason Mayhem Miller is still looking for a fight with Nick Diaz. At this point with Nick, especially after his last win, I see UFC going to look to take him back. Whatever. I don't know what his status of his contract is, but
yeah,
Nick's looking very, very good lately. I finally watched the fight. It was a great fight. It was a hell of a lot of punching. You know, if you like that sort of thing, which I do.
Yes.
I see UFC looking to make an offer to him real soon, but I don't know how many fights he's got left under Strikeforce.
Well, I imagine as long as he's holding the belt, he's
We call it Jake Shields.
Jake Shields came in under the Elite XC contract, though, didn't he?
I'm pretty sure.
I think Jake Shields was a special case because he came in from the Elite XC contract and he didn't have a renegotiated contract with Strikeforce, so he didn't have that clause. I could be wrong.
Yeah, you could be right. I'm not. I'd have to look that up. I do remember hearing like there is no champion. Strikeforce doesn't do the championship clause. That is a UFC thing. But I guess we'll see.
Well, if that's the case, then I would expect Nick to be courted by the UFC as soon as his contract is up.
Assuming he stays out of trouble.
Well, that's a big if.
It's a very big if. But yeah, he is twice the fighter he was when he left UFC. That's for damn sure.
Yeah.
And I'd love to see him in welterweight. I'd love to see what he could do. I think he would do very well against 90% of the welterweight division right now. It's the top guys who would give him problems. You know, your cost checks.
Fitch.
Those great wrestlers, you know, can still take him down. You know, it would, you know, how good that reach of his, he's gotten so good at using with that, you know, great jab of his.
Mm-hmm.
Could he keep three world-class wrestlers like that off of him just using the jab? And just using what the grappling knowledge. Even if he goes down, I don't think, you know, and he's proven, he's reverse cost check on their two fights, both times he's reverse cost check. So Diaz, and Diaz from the bottom is dangerous. You know, do you want to take him down? Is your jiu-jitsu that good?
Right.
You know, there's always that question. I don't know where my brain went. I completely was thinking about Nick Diaz, and all of a sudden my train of thought like veered off into Diego Sanchez, which is just a weird thing. But it is a great transition into talking about Nick Diaz. Did have a fight on the Brock Lesnar card. Looked great. Looked better than he's had in several fights.
Wait, what?
Nick Diaz or Diego Sanchez?
There we go.
Yeah, Diego Sanchez. Looked better in his last fight than he has in several fights. Back with the Greg Jackson camp.
Yes.
Screaming giant slams.
Unanimous decision against Paulo Thiago.
Fun fight. First round, he kind of was finding his, you know, getting back in his rhythm. But once he did, he looked great. Fun fight. I loved it.
Yes.
Was fight of the night, deservedly so. Maybe contender for fight of the year, possibly.
Interesting thing, one judge gave it 30-26 for Sanchez, which I thought was a little bit ridiculous. I thought Paulo Thiago won the first round.
Thiago won the first round, but it's still debatable enough. But.
Well, maybe. Well, obviously, I guess. But.
Yeah, giving the last round a 10-8 is not unreasonable, at least.
No, that's how I scored it, 10-8 for Diego for the last round.
Yeah. He dominated. Thiago's just, you know, anybody else would have crumbled, but, you know, Thiago is a really fucking tough dude.
Right.
He survived that round. But I was saying I was 10-8. I had a 29-27, which was 10-9 Thiago, 10-9 Diego, and then 10-8 Diego.
That's exactly how I scored it.
Well, then.
I took notes.
We should be fucking judges, man.
We should be.
We know more than Cecil Peoples. Actually, Cecil did not judge that badly this card, so.
Another noteworthy fight from that card, Jake Shields versus Martin Kampman for the title eliminator.
Yeah, noteworthy for many, many reasons.
Yeah, yes. Jake Shields, he won soundly.
I had a 29-28.
I had a 30-27 myself. One judge agreed with me, two judges agreed with you. But he did enough to win the decision, but he was clearly gassed out as the fight went along.
I thought he got enough damage in that third round, and his takedowns did not equate to winning the round. Just, you know, my interpretation of it. I might be colored because I saw his post-fight interview on MMA Live afterwards, and he looked like shit. His left eye was completely red from broken blood vessels. It's never a good look for anybody. I mean, yeah, he looked so exhausted in the third round. I mean, I thought he was going to die. I thought he was going to have a heart attack. I'd never seen anybody that fucking exhausted in MMA.
Yeah. So at this point, I'm extremely skeptical about his upcoming title shot against either GSP or Koscheck because, you know, if he can barely survive three rounds against Martin Kampman, there's no way he's going to make it five rounds against GSP or Koscheck. He's got a lot of work to do.
It was his first fight cutting back to 172.
It was.
He has a long time because, you know, we still have to wait for the GSP Koscheck winner. He has a long time to drop that muscle weight and rebuild his cardio. And Jake Shields was never a cardio issue before. It probably mostly was that the weight cut that really killed him.
Right. It'll be next spring probably before that fight happens because GSP is scheduled till December, I think.
Yeah, late springer, and if it's GSP wins, GSP likes only wants to fight twice a year, so GSP would probably want to wait, especially for a guy like Shields, he would want a long camp. So we're looking May or June.
Yeah.
So yeah, he is a long time to prepare for that fight.
And the way he looked, he'll need it.
Hey, it's just funny because people say, "Oh, you know, Fitch deserved a title shot. He didn't get it because he's boring." And it's like, Jake Shields is getting it. It's not like Jake Shields is like the world, setting the world on fire with exciting fights.
No.
He beat Hendo, and that's pretty much his big claim to fame right now, but he didn't do it very excitingly. He lost the first round pretty decisively, and he didn't do a whole lot. He held down a very, he held down a very tired Hendo, who also had a problem cutting weight.
Right.
So, you know, the irony are all around. You know, we will see. Jake Shields, you know, is on a 14-fight win streak, I think, at this point. He's very tough to count out. You know, if he can handle GSP or Koscheck's wrestling power, he handled Hendo's. But, you know, Hendo's a lot older than those two.
That's true.
GSP has stopped. GSP's wrestling has stopped everybody, including very, very high-level wrestlers. And Jake Shields is a grappler, more of a grappler jiu-jitsu by trade, not a, you know, straight wrestler. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what he can do. What Jake Shields actually can do against the GSP. I'd be more interested in him in a Koscheck fight. Right. But that's all depending on if Koscheck wins. I'm not feeling Koscheck.
Yeah, I think he's got a decent chance, but
probably better than most. He could hold him down for five rounds for
decision. But of course, he has lost to GSP once already. So
that's a very tall order to hold GSP down for five rounds. It's a very fucking tall order.
Right.
He could always get a flash knockout. Koscheck has shown his hands have improved, except when he was fighting that one Japanese guy and got knocked the fuck out. But GSP got knocked out by Matt Serra, of all people. So that shit happens in the sport.
Right.
Speaking of, we also had the Ultimate Fighter this season. I don't know your opinion, Alan, but wow, Koscheck. Not just kind of a dick. He is quite the dick.
He is quite the dick, yes.
What an asshole.
He is a massive cock. Massive, throbbing, veiny. Never mind.
He is Yes, he's a sweaty, veiny, dirty cotton ball head fucking cock. Blooming with pus, I guess we could say.
Smegma.
Yeah, you know, the thing with the medic the last episode is just like so fucking like a 16-year-old high school jock. I was just like, really? Yeah. Aren't you like 30, dude? He does a good job of making GSP, wanting people to see GSP just pound his face in.
Yes. But, you know, that's at least 50% of that's just the role he's playing. He's playing the heel.
But it is, and he's doing it intentionally, but he also is very naturally good at it.
Right.
It's not all shtick.
Right.
Like when Rampage like does his thing, part of you knows like he's just playing his character.
Right.
Kostyuk is like, no, that's just really mostly his naturally personality. He's just doing it on purpose because, you know, he knows.
People respond to it.
Yes. And there's another thing.
Tune in to see the fight.
Exactly. It sells fights. Said, you know, that's number one. You know, he gets a pay-per-view cut, headlining a massive pay-per-view like that, and he gets a cut of that money, you know.
Right.
So the more hated he is, and he's going into Montreal, he will be fucking hated.
Oh, yeah.
The more pay-per-views he will sell, the more money he will make. So.
Right.
But at the same time, it reflects, you know, his natural personality is just that fucking asshole-y. So.
Right.
I really do hope GSP just pounds is ever living. I don't want to see him like just beat him for five rounds. I want to see him actually just make him suffer for those five rounds, you know. Really lay on top of him and just, you know, fucking, you know, just pound his face just for five rounds. I don't want to see him quit or submit or see him get beat up. Just his face look like total shit after 25 minutes. Make me happy. So he's doing an effective job with me, and I'm definitely a person who knows what he's doing, and it still works.
Right.
So beautiful job. Speaking of, going to another fight off the last UFC card, the Court McGee fight, which was a great fight. I'm really getting behind Court McGee, the last Ultimate Fighter winner. Great story. Guy came back from a heroin addict of all fucking things.
Right.
Has become, you know, won the Ultimate Fighter out of the blue, won this fight, you know, from behind. But one of the other funny stories of this is about, I think, was it the middle of the first round or middle of the second round? The crowd just started booing vociferously. And, like, for no reason, it was, like, looking at the fight, like, what the hell's wrong with this fight? You know, it was just, you know, two guys trading. It was, you know, decent enough. It wasn't worth booing. And all of a sudden, Rogan says, oh, Josh Kostyuk just walked in the door.
That's right.
Was not shown on television.
Right.
I was like, wow. This is in California, too. This is his home. You know, he trains in AKA right here in California. This is his home state, his home country, fighting a Canadian. And he's booed this badly. And they started chanting GSP. I'm just supposed to tell you something. Could not even get, like, home state love or hometown or home country love. So Montreal is going to be maybe the loudest crowd in UFC history. I'm going to put money on that. Much better than my last lock of the week, which is Manny Gamburian, which we will go into.
That didn't work out so well, did it?
It did not. Jose Aldo is an amazing man. Let me tell you.
Yes, he'll be headlining UFC pay per views.
Well, his next one is a semi main on the New Year's card against one Josh Grispy.
One who now that's the problem with, you know, featherweight, bantamweight is that there is just a lack of, I'll say at least lack of sellable talent, at least right now.
Nobody knows who they are.
Right.
And half the time, even people who like me and you who watch WEC regularly, we don't know half these guys that come up.
Yeah. He's probably been on a card. I've probably seen him fight, but he didn't leave an impression.
I remember seeing him fight once or twice. But yeah, he wasn't like a guy who was like, wow, this is the next John Bones.
Right.
So, speaking of, another fight coming up, John Bones Jones, the Martian Manhunter, is fighting, you know, the Battle of the Nerdy Nicknames, Darth Vader.
I did not know that fight had been made.
Yes, I think it's December.
Okay. Is that supposedly a title eliminator, or is that just...
I would say both were next... it's not a title fight, but...
Well, not title
winner, fight. The winner will be fighting a top five guy next. You're looking at a Rashad, a Shogun, a Lyoto, a Rampage.
Right.
You know, someone in that mix, or someone just right below that.
Right.
Bader wins, I could see them, you know, maybe if Randy comes back for... No, and well, it doesn't look like Randy's going to fight. Randy might not fight again. But I would see Jones getting a more high-caliber opponent than the Bader one.
Right. Bader, I can't say I'm a big fan of Bader. He is not an exciting fighter. He gets the job done, but not in a way that's...
He's no John Bones.
That's true.
John Bones throws people around using Japanese pro wrestling moves or beats them into a living death, much like Ken Shamrock once said. And he's just a very exciting, dynamic fighter, and he's so frigging. Both of them are young, actually. Neither one of those guys are old.
There's
two young studs here. So that kind of even makes them more exciting. You know, they definitely win or lose. They're probably meeting down the line again if they both keep winning and improving. Maybe at some point, you know, that there's already a built-in story rematch for the title on the line. Should one of them go on to win the title,
right?
But you never know. Speaking of revenge stories, one I've talked about on the show several times, Okami Silva, the maybe happening. The next UFC card is for the title. Assuming Silva gets past Belfort, you're going to have Marquardt versus Okami. Winner gets a shot at the title, so we could finally have the last person who beat Silva challenging him for the title. Story well overdue. Okami, Okami probably deserved a title shot over Maya or that other guy who couldn't do shit, in my opinion. The two guys, Silva clown for five rounds.
Right.
Tommy probably deserved a shot over both those guys. Didn't get it for whatever reasons. He has the built-in storyline. You know, he has a win, albeit it's by DQ, but, you know, you can downplay that aspect of it.
Right. Well, I imagine he didn't get the title shot because he was a fairly boring fighter. And
he is fairly boring.
He has been more exciting lately. I'll give him that.
He has, and he showed, like, even he lost the fight to Rich Franklin in the third round. He all of a sudden came alive and looked great, and I was like, okay, why didn't you do that the first two rounds, asshole?
Right.
But, and he has a very, very good chance of getting past Marquardt. In fact, I would give the fight to Okami over Marquardt. I don't think it might end up being a boring wrestling match for the Okami. You know, he might go very conservative and look just to control on points because he wants the title shot.
Right.
We'll see. Marquardt is a way of bringing the bet. Marquardt is a way to bring in a brawl a lot of people, so. You know, it might be a barn burner. We said we have Vitor Belfort, Silva to look forward to. Belfort's got fast hands, always a chance. Just the skill and range of Silva, I just don't see him getting in. It's another win for Silva. By what is interesting, if he just... I think if he feels Belfort's dangerous, he will try to take him out in the first round. He seems to do that with guys that he worries about the striking.
Right.
Doesn't worry about the striking. He seems to play with him for five. So right. I would say I would look for Silva to knock out Belfort in the first, or try to.
Mm-hmm.
But again, Belfort always has a shot because he is very quick himself, and if he gets inside that range, you know. But we've never seen Silva susceptible to knockout, so we don't know. Who's really going to be the person to test Silva's chin?
Right.
Not a lot of people getting close enough to test his chin, either. That's another thing. You can say, like, he's got a good chin, but it's like, how many times has his chin been tested?
He's fast and he's long.
That's what she said.
Hey-o.
Hey-o.
So another fight I wanted to mention briefly was on the WEC card a few weeks ago, since you brought that card up. The Korean Zombie versus George Roop. The crowd favorite Korean Zombie, who quickly became
Without looking at your notes, can you give him? Can you give me his real name?
I'm already looking at my notes. It's Chen Sung Jung.
Okay.
But he quickly became a crowd favorite in the Aldo versus Faber undercard, just for being, you know, living up to his nickname, which is the Korean Zombie. He comes forward and doesn't stop. And he was against George Roop. He was knocked out cold with a head kick.
Yep.
So apparently doesn't take chainsaws, just a good swift kick to the head.
Well, you can only be shot. You can only be kicked in the head so many times before you fucking fall down.
That's true. So, you know, I still want to see the Korean Zombie fight, but he's going to have to do something impressive in order to maintain a fan base.
I'm thinking, the thing is, most people thought he won the first fight, and, you know, he does have two losses on him, but,
yeah,
again, most people don't view that first loss as a rule. I think Dana pretty much gave Zombie the first win. And Dana likes to wear his Korean Zombie shirt around a lot.
Yeah, he wore it on the Ultimate Fighter.
And he wore it at one of the weigh-ins also.
Oh, yeah.
He's a fan. It'll be a while before he's cut. But
I'm not saying he's going to be cut, but I think his allure is going to quickly diminish if he doesn't show up for the next fight.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I don't know if he's really going to change his style. I think he might be one of those guys that's just stubborn. I mean, Lieben has a very similar style, and he's kind of the same way. Lieben really hasn't changed his style ever.
Right.
And they're looking at him for a title shot, and it's like, really? I really don't see the first fight going any different in the second, because
right.
Lieben really doesn't have a different striking style. His wrestling, the best thing about Lieben is his conditioning and his wrestling defenses have improved. Neither help him against Silva. So his boxing style is exactly the same, and he can't take that. And he's already shown he can't take that many shots from Silva. So
right.
But, you know, he is one of the people in talks for the next season of Ultimate Fighter. The rotating of about three people to various, you know, it's either going to be, looks like it's either going to be Lieben versus Vanderlei Silva, Lieben versus Michael Bisping, or Michael Bisping versus Vanderlei Silva. One of those three is going to be the two coaches.
Any of those would be an interesting fight.
They Vanderlei and Chris Lieben both want to be coaches really bad. They don't care against who.
Yeah.
Bisping is neutral about it. He's like, if they want me to do it, I'll do it fine. I think he's a tad wary because, you know, kind of the whole last season he did kind of hurt his standings in the U.S. You know, he kind of came off as a, you know, a dickish heel versus, you know, a very quiet Dan Henderson. And
right.
I don't think he quite realized how he'd come off on that, and I don't think he wants to be in a position again. You know, he would like to cultivate an American fan base.
Right.
Or bring back what he had. But
Vanderlei
versus Lieben would be tough to call. They're both super charismatic.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, despite Vanderlei's lack of English, he has just that persona that people just love. You know, for years, one of the biggest stars in Pride, and it took two fights in the UFC for him to become like just this gigantic beloved guy, and just, you know, just a weird charisma he has. Lieben's been around since Tough One. You know, he has his fans. You
right.
know, it would be an interesting thing, you know, two giant baby faces against each other. I would like to see that one the most, but it would make more sense to put, you know, at least a heel in there. You know, if you did Lieben versus Bisping and you're airing it in the UK, you could at least have, you know, to bring out a wrestling analogy, I'm sure you don't understand. You know, it's been brought up on a couple other shows. I thought the first thing when I heard it, too. So I'm not completely stealing the idea. I had the same thought. Just I don't do my show as often. In pro wrestling, back in the late 90s, there was the Canadian wrestler Bret Hart turned heel against America, but they still kept him a babyface in Canada and Europe. And he said the exact same. He didn't, like, change what he said to who. Just the way he said what he said worked with as a babyface in Canada and Europe, and made him hated in America. And Bisping and Liebman could be the same way. You know, Bisping be standing up for UK, blah blah blah. He would still be beloved in UK. Liebman being Liebman, be beloved in the US and hated in the UK. You know, easily say. Plus, you know, their first fight, Liebman was busted for steroids, so
right.
Definitely work. You know, there's a lot of factors going into that. That one probably makes some more sense, but I just really want to see Vanderlei in some form on there. You know, as bad as Nogueira's English was, Vanderlei's is worse. So it'd be great to have a coach that, you know, can't really talk at all. But just his mere presence just makes people go, "Oh, look at the ugly man." Sweet.
Another interesting possibility with the WEC being absorbed by the UFC is WEC personalities on as tough coaches, and not to mention lighter weight fighters in the Ultimate Fighter, which actually would be possibly a really good way to help build up the divisions. Well,
some people have even suggested, you know, put Miguel and Uriah in there as coaches.
That's exactly what I was about to suggest.
But Uriah not just versus up and coming, actual, you know, a lot of name 135 guys. Like, they have already fought in WC.
Right.
You know, just, you know, really stack it with people, you know, that, you know, already are there, you know.
To give them exposure.
They're not known to the normal UFC public for the most part. So
right.
Just fill it with 135ers. You know, you could have some, you know, no names, you know, some lower level guys, but, you know, kind of stack it a little bit with like some bigger 135ers who've already fought in WC or kind of known to the hardcores.
Right. Maybe some of the less successful ones.
Yeah.
Just to keep it a little even so that the,
don't put it against like the number three and four 135 contenders in there. That would be really weird.
Right.
Yeah, I could see that, you know, just, you know, kind of like season one of Ultimate Fighter, which was full of guys who are really on the cusp of being in UFC or Pride anyway at that point. You know,
right.
Diego Sanchez, Forrest Griffin, you know, would have been, if there that show hadn't happened, would have been in UFC anyway.
Right.
Probably a couple months.
Right.
You know, Ken Florian, you know, all those guys. You know, their first season, a tough one, you know, for all the shit it got originally, was really full of, like, really, you know, actual talented up and
coming fighters. Yeah.
Tough has kind of fallen off that wayside. You know, there's very few guys. You know, Ryan Bader's really like a standout, a guy who really just does look like to be an actual legitimate up and coming contender.
Right.
For the last five or six seasons, it's been like nobody.
Right.
So, very interesting. So it's always interesting. Well, Roy Nelson also, but Roy Nelson was already an established person before he went on Tough.
And so is Kimbo Slice.
Oh, yeah. He's established as a he's established personality, that's for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anything else you want to talk about? I think I've covered my points today.
Oh, just a quick mention I think it deserves of Tito versus
Matt Hamill.
Matt Hamill. Yes, thank you.
Tito
looked all right. He got pretty well schooled, though, by the guy who used to be his student. So,
the younger, better wrestler. Yeah, he didn't look like he has any injuries plaguing him, but you know, he is old. He's a lot older, and you know, I'm not old, but I mean, I think he's my age.
Well,
my fighting standards, he is old.
Right.
He's been through a lot of wars. Whatever we like to talk shit about Tito, he's been fighting since he was like 20. Kids beat him. You know, he's definitely on the way downswing of his career. I don't know. I mean, I would say at most one more fight because they pay him way too much money to keep losing.
Yeah. I would agree with that. He hasn't been cut yet, but he needs to. He needs to pick it up quick if he wants to stay under contract with the UFC.
Yeah, speaking of, Gabe Gonzaga got cut.
He did. It's a little disappointing. I mean, he clearly lost that fight against Schaub, but nonetheless, I enjoyed watching him fight.
I always did. I always liked Gabe. And, yeah, he was the only one. Who else got cut that card? Oh, there's one other guy. But,
I don't
know what happens. Gabe can get the fire, you know, get a real training camp and get a fire under him.
Yeah.
You know, got a lot of potential. He's still fairly young.
Goes to show how the heavyweight division has changed in the last couple of years, because he was a title contender.
He fought for the title.
He did.
The thing with Gabe Gonzaga, a lot of people say, is he doesn't have a real training camp. He doesn't go to any mate. He trains with, like, his buddies in Maine. He's not, like, he has a lot of talent, and it's going nowhere. Maybe the cut will convince him to go.
He doesn't train like he's a professional fighter.
Yeah. Hopefully not to Greg Jackson. I'm tired of everybody going to Greg Jackson. It's just, at this point, everyone's going to be a Greg Jackson, and no one will want to fight each other. So if I don't see anything else, I think that will do it for this edition of Inside the Cage.
Or Outside the Cage.
Or Outside the Cage. There actually is a show called Inside the Cage, so good thing we didn't pick that one. Yes. I'm hoping we have Brian's thingy on this. I'm hoping it's recording.
Let's hope so.
Or else we just wasted 40 minutes of our time.
He's not listening in, is he?
No, he's on travel or still in Oregon at the wedding. But I did try to download some recording and editing equipment, and I could not get it to install. So that's why we did not record last week. But anyway, thank you guys for tuning in, all 70-whatever of you. And we will see you next time outside the cage.
You've been listening to Outside the Cage with your hosts, Gabriel Owens and Alan Young. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Outside the Cage is a Radio Free Cybertron production. Copyright 2010, Radio Free Cybertron.